Desolation Angel Radio, April 6th, 2020. I don't know, we're on episode 18 or 19, I think, of this show. My name's Kip Williams, the Desolation Angel. If you're listening in for the first time, this was, for 8 years, a music show I did once a week. A couple hours of music, me, that at the start of March, as the COVID-19 crisis marched across this country and started to take over and change all of our lives forever, I changed it into a show every night that's free, available, not just here. You might be listening to it through the link to the Master Library. I took the paywalls down and the entry walls down. Every episode is available there. It's also available for free subscription on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and a whole lot more. We try to bring voices. We try to bring information and resources and hope. This week, Monday, April 6th, this week, as we enter what's going to be a pretty grim week for the United States, is going to be centered on mental and emotional health. We've spent a lot of time talking in the month of March about mutual aid networks, about looking ahead, about how this is fundamentally changing the structure of who we are and how we live and will coming out of it. Lot of time on information and resources out there for people. But I will spend this week talking with experts and professionals in the field of mental and emotional health. This week, Jim Ballmer, whom I've known almost 40 years, helped found a treatment center in Washtenaw County in Michigan, therapist, mental health worker, somebody who is a valuable resource, and we talk about a lot of things and try and provide some hope and some resources. As always, I start off with a song, and I think it highly appropriate with John Prine. I think his wife said he was doing better, but John Prine, who's hospitalized with symptoms from COVID-19, and what better song than this one?
Child has grown old. If dreams were lightning, thunder were desire, this old house would have burned down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go. When I was a young girl, well, I had me a cowboy. He weren't much to look at, just a free rambling man. But that was a long time. No matter how I try, the years just flow by like a broken down dam. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go. There's flies in the kitchen, I can hear them there buzzing. And I ain't done nothing since I woke up today. How the hell can a person go to work in the morning and come home in the evening and have nothing to say? Make me
just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
And as I talked about in the intro, we're here with a very old, very dear, very good friend of mine, Jim Ballmer, over in Michigan. How are you today, Jim?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
you want to give the people your background as opposed to me spouting it off and specifically around what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I'm a recovering addict alcoholic. I got sober in August of 1971, so I'm officially a crusty old guy. Mm-hmm. And I run healthcare, human services, for the last almost 48 years. And I've spent the last 36 running a treatment center in Washtenaw County, called Dawn Farm.
Mm-hmm. So. Which actually, if you crossed my back property line when I was living in Ipsy, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it was founded, in 1973, by four of us, four mm-hmm. recovering addicts, and we're all still clean and sober. Mm-hmm. Back when there was very little treatment available, and particularly not much treatment available for, non-alcoholic, folks and for young people. And so mm-hmm. we rented a farmhouse and started taking people in, and now it's got, it's multiple sites and three residential sites and a detox and outpatient mm-hmm. and 185 transitional housing. It's a big place now. So
yeah.
Right now is completely locked down and thankfully free of coronavirus, but
yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, and you remind me of some things. I talked for about an hour Saturday night with Leah Rackless out in Colorado, who Mike's ex-wife, Mike and Carl, who used to live together. And you said it because we've known one another so long. We were all the rebels in 12-step programs at one point in time. We all of us, you, me, her, we were, because there wasn't much for young people. And here we were going, no, there's got to be something for young people. And now we're all in our 60s.
Yep. Late 60s in my case.
Yeah, early 60s for me, early 60s for her.
Yeah, no, that's true. It was a radical time.
Yeah.
We felt like we were the guerrilla recovering people.
We were. So, if you were.
We probably were.
I mean, if somebody had photos of those old Ipsy young people's meetings and what we looked like and how we were on the street, it was guerrilla recovery, yeah.
When I went to my first 12-step meeting, I had hair down to my waist, and everybody there were, back in those days, the men wore suits and ties, and the women wore dresses, and I mean, people dressed up to go to mutual aid groups, and I think it would be fair to say, as a matter of fact, I know that they've not seen someone like me, because many years after I moved away from where I first got sober, a friend of mine went to a meeting down there, and they said, we had a guy like you. And this was like 7 years after I'd moved away. And it was fair. I was still the iconic young man. Admittedly, it was summer 1971.
Yep.
Nixon's first term. So.
Yeah, because originally in Kalamazoo, there was four of us. Me, Bev, Randy, and Rick. And that was it. I mean, because people did not know what to do with us over there.
Yep.
They had no clue. We've made it through these years and you and I made it what is now the traditional way, that going to meetings, having a sponsor and doing all the things that we're supposed to do. And by grace, we're still to this day. Doing okay, but we're in a very unprecedented time. A lot of things changed radically 3-4 weeks ago, that have completely upended the model.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although, you know, I have watched in absolute amazement because even though the absence of the physical community is heart-wrenching, the explosion of people finding each other online is really something to behold.
It's marvelous.
And who knew something? I mean, and it made yesterday's New York Times the subject of online 12-step meetings.
Yeah, Zoom.
Not exactly tradition compliant, but interesting.
Well, I mean, considering the central office is in New York and lockdown too, yeah. If we talk about tradition compliance,
But I really do think, it certainly has changed, and I think it's just hard. I mean, there are a lot of people who are struggling. By the same token, people who are leaning into this, I have a number of people I have a relationship with who are actually going to more recovery meetings now than they were physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't have a good excuse.
Right. And there's Zoom technology and Skype technology is making that so possible to do a full virtual meeting with a number of people.
Yeah.
It really
it's amazing.
Is. Yeah. And you hit on it right there. You hit on something that I think we need to talk about because beyond AA, beyond NA, I mean, I'm talking any 12-step program, OA,
yeah.
ACA, ACOA,
sure.
SLAA, everybody is feeling the same effects in not only is this unprecedented, I think there's a lot of emotional stress for people who are in recovery in any form of recovery and for people who are living with them because the standard answer of read the book, call your sponsor, go to a meeting isn't there right now other than going to those virtual meetings, which is marvelous, but there's also some really unprecedented emotional stress on people as they're locked in their homes and locked. And I've had this conversation with a couple people on the show. People are having to deal with their inner demons, whether they want to or not.
It's true. Although I heard, a big fan of Mark Maron,
mm-hmm.
who's recovering.
Yeah.
And I used to tell people, I used to tell new clients at our treatment program that the baseline emotional foundation of every addict or alcoholic I've ever seen was fear. And Mark Maron said, it's not really fear. He said, it's dread. It's this sense of unease, this sense of, alcoholics and addicts view their lives as a series of barriers to overcome. You know, if I can make it through today, if I can make it to Friday, to that money, to that, you know, it's always in front of you. And the internal talk of an alcoholic or an addict untreated is kind of despair-driven.
Oh, it's this whole existential dread thing. It really is.
But I heard Mark Maron talking with Terry Gross last week or week before, and he was saying that, and she was asking him, how are you dealing with all this isolation and everything? He says, well, actually, it's kind of interesting. He says, it sort of feels like the rest of the world is catching up with what has been kind of a baseline for me my whole life. All these people have experienced this profound sense of dread. You know, I know all about that.
Yeah. And I've laughed about this on this show all month and said, everybody's just catching up with me. I'm quite used to social isolation. I'm quite used to having to deal with my own inner demons.
I have had this conversation with lots of people about the fact that tonight, I have no idea, I haven't seen some of these lists of recovery meetings. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of recovery meetings that, because of their computer base, are going to have people visiting them from all over. I was at an online meeting recently. It had somebody from Australia just found it on, you know, just came and joined this meeting. And there's a very real way in which, even though recovering people with addictions have sort of special needs, they also have special access. Because there are lots and lots of people right now who are hurting, who are struggling, who are afraid, and they got no link to click on.
Right.
And but, it's an ironic situation that out of our, I don't know what the word is, inadequacies, or out of our, you know, learning to become to lean into our powerlessness and our need to become accountable and our need to be in community. We have more resources than most other people during this thing.
Yeah.
We got a place to go.
We do.
A lot of crazy people and a lot of hurting people, and most of them don't have a place to go on a Monday night.
Well, and the other part of that is the other thing that I've seen is that those in recovery who are handling it are now becoming a resource for other people, the people that have to deal now with that existential dread, the people that have to deal with that isolation, because now they can look at their folks they know who are in recovery and handling this on a daily basis and go, okay, how do you do it?
And
so we have become that for some people. You know,
I've seen stuff about people riffing on 12-step recovery as a model. And you think about, you know, the foundation of what we learn in recovery is, you know, we're powerless, our lives are unmanageable. You know, we learn this sense of what we're capable of, which is our own internal processing, and what we're not in control of, which is pretty much everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, boy, it's a lot of powerlessness out there.
Oh, there's so much loss of control, or rather people are seeing the illusion of what they thought was control for what it is, an illusion.
Yeah, this is absolutely a time of true powerlessness for maybe everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, and I had this, because everything dovetails, my conversations the last three nights were with people, not only that, but starting to understand the value and worth of connection, real connection, because we had become so enamored as a society of social media and digital connection, which was so facile and so surface. And now it's like, no, I need real connection. I need people to see me for where I'm at. I'm scared this morning. Or, hey, look, this is a big deal, man. And people being able to congratulate themselves on, I got out of bed, I got dressed, I brushed my teeth. And there's a part of me that wants to laugh inside, if you'll recall, our first, you know, 1, 2, 3 years of sobering up. That was a big deal. I got out of bed, dressed, and brushed my teeth.
Yeah, that's right. Making it through the basics is sometimes all you can do when you're new in recovery.
Right. And I've told people over and over a variation on that thing that we learned so well, which is, okay, I didn't get much done today, but I didn't drink. And now the variation for people for whom alcohol or drugs might not be a problem, but quarantine and social isolation and emotional isolation is a problem, is I didn't fall to my depression and despair today. I got up and I got dressed. Well, that's the best you could do, and that's cool.
I've often thought, I've told this story lots of times around here, that you know, I'm a pretty smart guy, but when I got sober, I was really damaged. I really burned it down, and as a result, there was a way in which when I first showed up, I was, for lack of a better word, stupid.
Yeah,
I was broken to the point where, mm-hmm, I've often said that the only thing I remember about my first 12-step meeting was I remember thinking to myself, if I do what these people tell me, I might survive. Now, I was not thinking I would have a career, I'd be married 40 years, I'd have kids and grandkids, and, you know, I mean, none of that was, I mean, I was really thinking about not wanting to take my own life every day. I had very, very small goals. But it made me teachable,
mm-hmm,
in a way that has held me in good stead for almost 49 years.
Yeah.
It allowed me to somehow stick with this idea that suspending my, you know, I tell people all the time that the defining characteristic to me of people who stay sober is the ability to suspend your disbelief and listen to the direction of another human being.
And I'll tell a story on myself. And the story that I tell on myself is this, and some of the listeners to this show who know me these days know it. And it's about questioning the wisdom of the universe. The last 3-4 years of my life, previous to this, I would say prior to, you know, like last Christmas, even as much as last Christmas.
Yeah.
I literally broke down to base zero and did everything except drink. And had to rebuild a lot of that all over again. And some of it was because of the amount of time I had getting over my own arrogance and getting over myself and understanding I'm at baseline zero. I'm back at baseline zero. Now, how do I rebuild and how do I come back out of this? And of course, the wisdom of the universe was as this crisis broke around the world, I had in a lot of ways successfully reintegrated a lot of things, successfully rebuilt. And so this crisis breaks around the world and I'm sitting there, one morning last month, woke up and went, oh, that's what this was about. I had to relearn this all over again for this to be ready to be of service and of help, because that's part of how I'm getting through it. And we talked about that, and the listeners to the show know it, is that I'm out in the street taking care of vulnerable populations, because that's when I'm at my best, is when I'm of service to other people.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And so what advice would you have, Jim? And I'm going to lean directly on you as somebody with your background as a treatment center director, your background in mental health and emotional health and in social services. So what advice would you have first for those people who are in the recovery, but in this unprecedented time in our life, not just without the ability to physically get to meetings, but with this whole, we still don't know how this thing operates and you could die, you know, if you get too close to another human being and they have it. What would your advice be?
Well, I mean, again, I think find somebody to whom you can be accountable. Find somebody who you're willing to tell on yourself to, you know? Mm-hmm. I've been an administrator for many, many years, but back when I was a therapist, I was a Gestalt therapist, and one of the things Gestalt therapists learn is what's called respect for pain, right? And it has something to do with leaning into your pain, but at least not being afraid to really, for example, to talk about the things you're afraid of, to find that person where you're really willing to. You know, in 12-step parlance, you know, we do an inventory and we do multiple inventories where we tell on ourselves. I think that's a gift that we get as recovering people, to be able to unburden ourselves. And I think whether you're in recovery or you're just the average Joe, the ability to unburden yourself and to share your fears and to share the things that, I mean, the stuff that really scares you most, the stuff you figured you'd take to your grave, those are the things that free us, you know? Somebody asked me just yesterday if I was afraid, and I said, I'm being cautious, you know? I'm doing not entirely at home, but a lot at home. But I'm actually not personally afraid right now. I'm afraid, I'm afraid. I'm writing a letter to my grandchildren right now because I'm concerned about them being afraid. I'm going to tell them about the Cuban Missile Crisis because I remember being afraid as a kid in 1962.
Right. Dude, we're old enough remembering the Cuban Missile Crisis and remembering Kennedy being assassinated and assassinated.
But I'm afraid. Yeah. I'm afraid for them. Yeah. I'm not really afraid for me. And that's a different, recovery, if you try and do the basics, makes you outward looking. Sounds, just like you used to talk about the service work. And I think that's how it ought to be. You know, we should be, I spend more time praying for the various people in my, I have a whole list. I'm looking at it right now. People I pray for. I spend a lot more time praying for those people than I spend praying for me.
That's something I learned early on, and I suppose that's why I'm out doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I would rather pray for other people. It's like, why? And the things I learned in my spiritual practices, which we've talked about and you well know, is you pray for the people.
Right.
You pray for your loved ones. You pray for the people. And the only prayer I have for myself is, I'm humble. Do with me what you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, really, this is, you know, most people who get the coronavirus recover, those of us who are addicts and alcoholics know that we're already living on borrowed time. For those of us in our 60s and 70s, who got over that many years ago, we continue to be amused because none of us ever prepared to live this long.
Right.
What do I do now? I guess I figure it out as I go along.
Yep. And that's been the case, you know, all along. Is, man, I got to figure this out because I didn't think I would live past 30.
No, past 25.
Right. So. And so, you know, at this point, it's like, man, I'm an over 60 ghost driving a meat coated skeleton on a rock hurtling through space, and the ride's going to end sometime.
Yep. You know? Yep.
So what advice would you have for family members that might be quarantined or in pause mode or in physical isolation with someone who is in recovery, you know, or who is an addict?
Well, I will tell you, crack open another laptop and start looking for the plethora of Al-Anon meetings and family meetings. Mm-hmm. There's a Families Against Narcotics meeting tonight online. And there are lots of mutual aid groups out there, and mm-hmm. I can't imagine that it takes more than a quick Google search to start finding, or just scroll around through Facebook I see lists all the time.
My regular group has a Zoom meeting still on Thursdays at 8:30.
My home group on Wednesday night has a Zoom meeting. I'm actually going to a meeting tonight that I get invited to from somebody upstate Michigan, because a friend of mine lives up there, and I haven't seen him in a while, so I'm going to go online to go to that meeting, an out of town meeting, mm-hmm. and hang out with my friend.
Well, so, every meeting's an out of town meeting right now. I mean, Can we go around and introduce the visitors? We're all visitors. We're all from out of town.
And I think, there's a lot, like I say, I've seen postings of the application of 12-step principles, of recovery principles, of powerlessness and humility and gratitude and some of those things that are sort of key linchpins in how recovering people stay in recovery.
I think you and I both shared that one from Psychology Today. You sent it to me on how 12-step programs.
Yeah, that's right. That was
12-step principles apply to being in quarantine along with, you know, helping with addiction.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I think there's lots of resources mm-hmm. out there. You just have to, you mm-hmm. need to look for them and then, you know, try and, practice these principles in all our affairs.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh man, you're reminding me of so much. You really are, and I love it. I do. I absolutely love it.
We have known each other a long time, Kip.
Yeah, I know, and I do remember you in overalls. Okay.
Oh sure.
You remember me back when I actually had hair.
Well, you and me both. Yeah. Right? So that's right. Well, you could do worse than start young and stay sober all these years.
Could have done a lot worse than that. A lot worse.
What a fun ride.
It's been.
And I will tell you, I'll tell these stories. When I moved to Ann Arbor, there were 6 12-step meetings in Ann Arbor and 2 in Ypsilanti, the neighboring town, uh-huh. and that was all. And this community now is this hub of the recovery in the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And there are hundreds and hundreds of meetings in this town every week. It's astonishing. And now to see it, I think when this all ends, when the smoke clears, online meetings will be an integral part of people's recovery moving forward. I don't think this is going to.
No, absolutely. Because if we're looking at a year, 2 years before we get a vaccine and we have to increase. So, you know, we have to increase the length of time that we're physically distancing from one another, then that's going to have to become a model, a regular model.
Yeah. Well, I have a sponsee who has tried to get into meetings and has been in a meeting every night for the last 3 weeks. Maybe the first time in their sobriety that they climbed, and since they were new.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a fan.
I am too, because it's like, and I know Mark Maron is sober and you're a fan of his. I'm a fan of Russell Brand's.
Oh, yeah, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Russell is just so, because Russell is so cool. And he's this figure that, and of course, one of the most profound of his podcasts was he and Brené Brown together, like unfiltered for hour and a half, two hours. And and I listened to that on occasion over and over again, you know, going, okay, this is, you know, we can do this because Russell is so warm and inviting and such an example of going from this outrageously wealthy, outrageous personality celebrity to, I don't want any of that. I want to be sane and sober and live the rest of my life in peace.
Doesn't everybody want to just live the rest of their life in peace?
Absolutely.
You know, the one thing we really learn in recovery is how to overcome our fear. Mm-hmm. So it's an attractive package right now. People really want to stop being so afraid, and I don't blame them.
I don't either, because you know what? Sorry. It sucks to live in fear. I know what it's like. You knew me back in the day, and you knew where I'd come from. And, you know, it's like in my case, it was that basement floor, you know, with a mattress and a ceramic wash basin to puke in and trying to go, okay, I hope I don't die tonight, you know, and which was at 24 years old when you look all the way back, not a way to live.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So, but it's been, this is a ride right now, and I think that we're going to come out the other side of it. And every conversation I've had with every voice, every person, all says the same thing. We're going to come out of this different, and it's our choice to build something better with the lessons we're learning from it.
I agree. I think we can come out of this better. I think the temper, I think about not being able to hug my grandchildren. I will never look at hugging my grandchildren quite the same way.
Oh, I am going to be such a hug slut with my friends. When I finally get out of this, it's like, look out. As a matter of fact, I was talking with a friend of mine last night who said, I think we should make it a thing now that people should wear a button that says it's not okay to attack me with a hug. Because otherwise, when I see you, here I come.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Showing us how much love we actually need.
Yeah, it is so wonderful to speak with you, and thank you so much for offering your insights to everybody here tonight.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it. And I will see you again on the other side of it, and us two old men can embarrass people with the way we hug.
So, okay. All right, take care, my friend.
Yeah, you too. You too. Say hi to everybody for me, because we have many people in common. All right? I love you. Stay safe. Be at peace.
Okay, you too.
All right. Bye-bye. Jim Ballmer, who a lot of people in my life these days, a lot of people listen to this podcast, you've only known me 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I do have people I've known 40 years, some people 47, 48 years, who have seen the whole evolution of. And as you heard me say in there, you know, telling stories on myself, especially if you're one of the people that has gotten to know me in the last 5, 6, 7 years, or even the last two, I didn't realize it at the time. And this is the self-confession part. I didn't realize it at the time, 3, 4 years ago. And I talked about this with Kate a couple weeks ago when I said I was so angry over what was happening. And I was. But what I didn't realize is that the universe was getting me ready for this, that I had to be stripped down to basics and deal with my own inner demons so I could do what I'm doing now, be out there in the street every day making deliveries to the vulnerable population, to be there for people, to be able to stand tall and tell people we're going to get through this, to put this show out every night. And I thank each and every one of you. Yes, even you. I thank you, because you were all part of the plan, which is a hint about what song I'm going to play at the very end tonight. But you were all part of the plan about getting me ready to be able to do this, because I'm just one person. I'm just one voice amongst many. I'm just one candle with all of yours. I'm not special. I'm not a hero. I'm just me. And I thank you, because you all made that. Not just you, but you and you and you and you and you and even you. You all did that. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, because you got me ready for this. And as Jim said, there's a lot of tools that are available, because what I see with people is this is always this undercurrent of fear. And you've heard me say it show after show. It's okay to be afraid. It is big. It is scary. It is unknown. I see people that are frozen, and it's okay to be frozen. I see people that are in denial, and it's okay. But eventually, at some point, we got to come to grips with that. And there's a lot of tools available to do that. A lot of them online. All this week, we will be dealing with mental and emotional health, with finding ways to cope with what's happening, to cope with the fear and the threat of coronavirus, COVID-19, to cope with physical isolation, isolation from other human beings, and emotional isolation, finding ways to do that are healthy and productive and can help you and still help you to understand that your feelings about all of it, no matter what they are valid, okay, and that you're valid, because you are, and you count. And if you're here right now on the planet at this time, you are part of this puzzle, and you're an integral part, and you count, no matter who you are. So, again, if you're listening for the first time, my name is Kip Williams. This is Desolation Angel Radio. It's been on the air a long time. I had the Nomad Project, which is what's out there, delivering grocery and pharmacy to vulnerables. I'm here in Buffalo, New York. If you need help about anything, even something you heard tonight, my phone number, and I always put it out there, is area code 504-717-8386. That can be found on Facebook, either through Kip Williams in Buffalo, there's only one of me, or Desolation Angel Radio. It's got a Facebook page. The Nomad Project's got a Facebook page. But your voice counts. And all this week, we will be bringing people on who are professionals and or lay people that have started mutual aid groups, emotional support, wellness support, mental health support, to try and provide you with tools. Again, if you're listening to it on Podbean, you can subscribe there. The paywalls are down. The whole library is there, every show from the month of March, with all those information and resources, and every show going forward with all of those voices, other people's voices, your voices, our voices all joining together in that chorus that says we will get through this, and we will get through it together. We might not be able to be physically together. We might have to be 8 to 10 foot apart, a mile apart, 200 miles apart, but we will get through it together emotionally that way. And we will. I'll talk to you again tomorrow night. I've got a great lineup of guests this week. I really enjoy doing this. As you know, the whole thing is, I'm at my best when I'm helping people and serving other people. And it's not about me. It's about all of you and what you need. And it's about all of them and what they need. And I had this conversation over the weekend with somebody. We are only as strong as the weakest link in the chain. And as opposed to being some kind of Darwinist and letting that weakest link fall, no. It is our job. I think, I believe, I could be right. I might not be. What I think might not be right, what I think might not be true, but I believe it's our job when somebody is struggling and having a hard time to help them with whatever they need to become a stronger link in the chain. Because if anything, what coronavirus COVID-19 is teaching us is that we are all connected. We are interconnected and we are one big chain, and it all is part of the plan. I will talk to you again tomorrow night. And you see your mistakes and you win.
someone would buy your confession. The days miss their mark and the night gets so dark, and some kind of message comes through to you, some kind of message shoots through, and it says to you,
love when you can, cry when you have to, feel you must, that's a part of a plan.